stone sinking to the bottom. I let the pebbles tumble to the ground from my fingers, where they lie, haphazard or purposeful, an augury or an accident. If Chiron were here, he could read them, tell us our fortunes, but he is not here. What if he will not beg? I ask.
Then he will die. They will all die. I will not fight until he does.
His chin juts, bracing for reproach. I am worn out. My arm hurts where I cut it, and my skin feels coated with unwholesome sweat. I do not answer.
Did you hear what I said?
I heard, I say. Greeks will die. Chiron had said once that nations were the most foolish of mortal inventions.
No man is worth more than another, wherever he is from.
But what if he is your friend?
Achilles had asked him, feet kicked up on the wall of the rose quartz cave.
Or your brother? Should you treat him the same as a stranger?
You ask a question that philosophers argue over, Chiron had said. He is worth more to you, perhaps, but the stranger is someone else's friend and brother. So which life is more important?
We had been silent. We were 14, and these things were too hard for us. Now that we are 27, they still feel too hard. He is half of my soul, as the poets say. He will be dead soon, and his honor is all that will remain. It is his child, his dearest self. Should I reproach him for it? I have saved Briseis. I cannot save them all. I know now how I would answer Chiron. I would say, there is no answer. Whichever you choose, you are wrong. Later that evening, I go back to Agamemnon's camp. As I walk, I feel the eyes on me, curious and pitying. They look behind me to see if Achilles is following. He is not. When I told him where I was going, it seemed to cast him back into the shadows.
Tell her I am sorry, he said, his eyes down.
I did not answer. Is he sorry because he has a better vengeance now? One that will strike down not just Agamemnon but his whole ungrateful army? I do not let myself dwell on this thought. He is sorry. It is enough.
Come in,
she says, her voice strange. She is wearing a gold-threaded dress and a necklace of lapis lazuli. On her wrists are bracelets of engraved silver. She clinks when she stands, as though she's wearing armor. She's embarrassed, I can see that. But we do not have time to speak, because Agamemnon himself is bulging through the narrow slit behind me.
Do you see how well I keep her? He says. The whole camp will see in what esteem I hold Achilles. He only has to apologize, and I will heap the honors on him that he deserves. Truly, it is unfortunate that one so young has so much pride.
The smug look on his face makes me angry, but what did I expect? I have done this. Her safety for his honor. This is a credit to you, mighty king, I say.
Tell Achilles, Agamemnon continues, tell him how well I treat her. You may come any time you like to see her.
He offers an unpleasant smile, then stands watching us. He has no intention of leaving. I turn to Briseis. I have learned a few pieces of her language, and I use them now. You are all right, truly?
I am,
she replies, in the sharp sing-song of Anatolian.
How long will it be?
I don't know, I say, and I don't. How much heat does it take for iron to grow soft enough to bend? I lean forward and gently kiss her cheek. I will be back again soon, I say in Greek. She nods. Agamemnon eyes me as I leave. I hear him say,
What did he say to you?
I hear her answer.
He admired my dress.
The next morning, all the other kings march off with their armies to fight the Trojans. The army of Thyre does not follow. Achilles and I linger long over breakfast. Why should we not? There is nothing else for us to do. We may swim if we like, or play at draughts, or spend all day racing. We have not been at such utter leisure since Pelion. Yet it does not feel like leisure. It feels like a held breath, like an eagle poised before the dive. My shoulders hunch, and I cannot stop myself from looking down the empty beach. We are waiting to see what the gods will do. We do not have to wait long. Chapter 28. That night, Phoenix comes limping up the shore with news of a duel. As the armies rallied in the morning, Paris had strutted along the Trojan line, golden armor flashing. He offered a challenge, single combat, winner takes Helen. The Greeks bellowed their approval. Which of them did not want to leave that day, to wager Helen on a single fight and settle it once and for all? And Paris looked an easy target, shining and slight, slim-hipped as an unwed girl. But it was Menelaus, Phoenix said, who came forward, roaring acceptance at the chance to regain his honor and his beautiful wife in one. The duel begins with spears and moves quickly to swords. Paris is swifter than Menelaus had anticipated, no fighter, but fast on his feet. At last the Trojan prince missteps and Menelaus seizes him by his long horsehair crest and drags him down to the earth. Paris's feet kick helplessly, his fingers scrabble at the choking chinstrap. Then, suddenly, the helmet comes free in Menelaus's hand and Paris is gone. Where the Trojan prince sprawled, there is only dusty ground. The armies squint and whisper, "Where is he?" Menelaus squints with them, and so does not see the arrow, loosed from an ibex horn bow, along the Trojan line flying towards him. It punches through his leather armor and buries itself in his stomach. Blood pours down his legs and puddles at his feet. It is mostly a surface wound, but the Greeks do not know that yet. They scream and rush the Trojan ranks, enraged at the betrayal. A bloody melee begins. "But what happened to Paris?" I ask. Phoenix shakes his head.
"I do not know."
The two sides fought on through the afternoon until another trumpet blew. It was Hector, offering a second truce, a second duel to make right the dishonor of Paris's disappearance and the shooting of the arrow. He presented himself in his brother's place to any man who dared answer. Menelaus, Phoenix said, would have stepped forward again, but Agamemnon prevented him. He did not want to see his brother die against the strongest of the Trojans. The Greeks drew lots for who would fight with Hector. I imagine their tension, the silence before the helmet is shaken and the lot jumps out. Odysseus bends to the dusty earth to retrieve it. Ajax. There is collective relief. He is the only man who has a chance against the Trojan prince. The only man, that is, who fights today. So Ajax and Hector fight, heaving stones at each other and spears that shatter shields until night falls and the heralds call an end. It is strangely civilized. The two armies part in peace, Hector and Ajax shaking hands as equals. The soldiers whisper, "It would not have ended so if Achilles were here." Discharged of his news, Phoenix gets wearily to his feet and limps on the arm of Automedon back to his tent. Achilles turns to me. He is breathing quickly, the tips of his ears pinking with excitement. He seizes my hand and crows to me of the day's events, of how his name was on everyone's lips, of the power of his absence, big as a cyclops, walking heavily amongst the soldiers. The excitement of the day has flared through him like flame in dry grass. For the first time he dreams of killing, the stroke of glory, his inevitable spear through Hector's heart. My skin prickles to hear him say so. "Do you see?" he says. "It is the beginning." I cannot escape the feeling that, below the surface, something is breaking. There is a trumpet the next morning at dawn. We rise and climb the hill to see an army of horsemen riding for Troy from the east. Their horses are large and move with unnatural speed, drawing light-wheeled chariots behind them. At their head sits a huge man, larger even than Ajax. He wears his black hair long like the Spartans do, oiled and swinging down his back. He carries a standard in the shape of a horse's head. Phoenix has joined us.
The Lycians, he says.
They are Anatolians, long allies of Troy. It has been a source of much wonder that they have not yet come to join the war, but now, as if summoned by Zeus himself, they are here.
Who is that?
Achilles points to the giant, their leader.
Sarpedon, a son of Zeus.
The sun gleams off the man's shoulders, sweat slick from the ride. His skin is dark gold. The gates open, and the Trojans pour out to meet their allies. Hector and Sarpedon clasp hands, then lead their troops into the field. The Lycian weapons are strange. Saw-toothed javelins and things that look like giant fish hooks for ripping into flesh. All that day, we hear their battle cries and the pounding hooves of their cavalry. There is a steady stream of Greek wounded into Machaon's tent. Phoenix goes to the evening's council, the only member of our camp not in disgrace. When he returns, he looks sharply at Achilles.
Idomeneus is wounded, and the Lycians broke the left flank. Sarpedon and Hector will crush us between them.
Achilles does not notice Phoenix's disapproval. He turns to me in triumph.
Do you hear that?
I hear it, I say. A day passes, and another. Rumors come thick as biting flies. Tales of the Trojan army driving forward, unstoppable and bold in Achilles' absence. Of frantic councils where our kings argue over desperate strategy, night raids, spies, ambushes. And then more. Hector ablaze in battle, burning through Greeks like a brush fire, and every day more dead than the day before. Finally, panicked runners bringing news of retreats and wounds among the kings. Achilles fingers this gossip, turning it this way and that.
It will not be long now, he says.
The funeral pyres burn through the night, their greasy smoke smeared across the moon. I try not to think how every one is a man I know, new. Achilles is playing the lyre when they arrive. There are three of them, Phoenix first, and behind him Odysseus and Ajax. I am sitting beside Achilles as they come. Farther off is Automedon, carving the meat for supper. Achilles' head is lifted as he sings, his voice clear and sweet. I straighten, and my hand leaves his foot where it has been resting. The trio approach us and stand on the other side of the fire, waiting for Achilles to finish. He puts down his lyre and rises.
Welcome. You will stay for dinner, I hope.
He clasps their hands warmly, smiling through their stiffness. I know why they have come. I must see to the meal, I mumble. I feel Odysseus's eyes on my back as I go. The strips of lamb drip and sear on the brazier's grill. Through the haze of smoke I watch them, seated around the fire as if they are friends. I cannot hear their words, but Achilles is smiling still, pushing past their grimness, pretending he does not see it. Then he calls for me, and I cannot stall any longer. Dutifully, I bring the platters and take my seat beside him. He is making desultory conversation of battles and helmets. While he talks, he serves the meal, a fussing host who gives seconds to everyone and thirds to Ajax. They eat and let him talk. When they are finished, they wipe their mouths and put aside their plates. Everyone seems to know it is time. It is Odysseus, of course, who begins. He talks first of things, casual words that he drops into our laps one at a time. A list, really. 12 swift horses and 7 bronze tripods and 7 pretty girls, 10 bars of gold, 20 cauldrons and more, bowls and goblets and armor, and at last, the final gem held before us, Briseis's return. He smiles and spreads his hands with a guileless shrug I recognize from Skyros, from Aulis, and now from Troy. Then a second list,
almost as long as the first, the endless names of Greek dead. Achilles' jaw grows hard as Odysseus draws forth tablet after tablet, crammed to the margin with marks. Ajax looks down at his hands, scabbed from the splintering of shields and spears. Then Odysseus tells us news that we do not know yet, that the Trojans are less than 1,000 paces from our wall, encamped on newly won plain we could not take back before dusk. Would we like proof? We can probably see their watchfires from the hill just beyond our camp. They will attack at dawn. There is silence. A long moment of it, before Achilles speaks. No, he says, shoving back treasure and guilt. His honor is not such a trifle that it can be returned in a night embassy, in a handful huddled around a campfire. It was taken before the entire host, witnessed by every last man. The king of Ithaca pokes the fire that sits between them. She has not been harmed, you know, Briseis. God knows where Agamemnon found the restraint, but she is well kept and whole. She and your honor wait only for you to reclaim them. You make it sound as if I have abandoned my honor, Achilles says, his voice tart as raw wine. Is that what you spin? Are you Agamemnon's spider, catching flies with that tail? Very poetic, Odysseus says, but tomorrow will not be a bard song. Tomorrow, the Trojans will break through the wall and burn the ships. Will you stand by and do nothing? That depends on Agamemnon. If he makes right the wrong he has done me, I will chase the Trojans to Persia if you like. Tell me, Odysseus asks, why is Hector not dead? He holds up a hand. I do not seek an answer. I merely repeat what all the men wish to know. In the last 10 years, you could have killed him 1,000 times over, yet you have not. It makes a man wonder. His tone tells us that he does not wonder, that he knows of the prophecy. I am glad that there is only Ajax with him, who will not understand the exchange. You have eked out 10 more years of life, and I am glad for you. But the rest of us, his mouth twists, the rest of us are forced to wait for your leisure. You are holding us here, Achilles. You were given a choice and you chose. You must live by it now. We stare at him, but he is not finished yet. You have made a fair run of blocking fate's path, but you cannot do it forever. The gods will not let you. He pauses to let us hear each word of what he says. The thread will run smooth, whether you choose it or not. Now, I tell you as a friend, it is better to seek it on your own terms, to make it go at your pace than theirs. That is what I am doing. Very well, Odysseus says. I have said what I came to say. Achilles stands. Then it is time for you to leave. Not yet. It is Phoenix. I too have something I wish to say. Slowly, caught between his pride and his respect for the old man, Achilles sits. Phoenix begins. When you were a boy, Achilles, your father gave you to me to raise. Your mother was long gone, and I was the only nurse you would have, cutting your meat and teaching you myself. Now you are a man, and still I strive to watch over you, to keep you safe from spear and sword and folly. My eyes lift to Achilles, and I see that he is tensed, wary. I understand what he fears, being played upon by the gentleness of this old man, being convinced by his words to give something up. Worse, a sudden doubt that perhaps, if Phoenix agrees with these men, he is wrong. The old man holds up a hand as if to stop the spin of such thoughts. Whatever you do, I will stand with you, as I always have. But before you decide your course, there is a story you should hear. He does not give Achilles time to object. In the days of your father's father, there was a young hero, Meleager,
whose town of Caledon was besieged by a fierce people called the Curetes.
I know this story, I think. I heard Peleus tell it long ago, while Achilles grinned at me from the shadows. There was no blood on his hands then, and no death sentence on his head. Another life.
In the beginning, the Curetes were losing, worn down by Meleager's skill in war,
Phoenix continues.
Then one day, there was an insult, a slight to his honor by his own people, and Meleager refused to fight any further on his city's behalf. The people offered him gifts and apologies, but he would not hear them. He stormed off to his room to lie with his wife, Cleopatra, and be comforted.
When he speaks her name, Phoenix's eyes flicker to me.
At last, when her city was falling and her friends dying, Cleopatra could bear it no longer. She went to beg her husband to fight again. He loved her above all things and so agreed, and won a mighty victory for his people. But though he had saved them, he came too late. Too many lives had been lost to his pride, and so they gave him no gratitude, no gifts, only their hatred for not having spared them sooner.
In the silence, I can hear Phoenix's breaths, labored with the exertion of speaking so long. I do not dare to speak or move. I am afraid that someone will see the thought that is plain on my face. It was not honor that made Meleager fight, or his friends, or victory, or revenge, or even his own life. It was Cleopatra, on her knees before him, her face streaked with tears. Here is Phoenix's craft. Cleopatra, Patroclus, her name built from the same pieces as mine, only reversed. If Achilles noticed, he does not show it. His voice is gentle for the old man's sake, but still he refuses. Not until Agamemnon gives back the honor he has taken from me. Even in the darkness, I can see that Odysseus is not surprised. I can almost hear his report to the others, his hands spread in regret. I tried. If Achilles had agreed, all to the good. If he did not, his refusal in the face of prizes and apologies would only seem like madness, like fury or unreasonable pride. They will hate him, just as they hated Meleager. My chest tightens in panic, in a quick desire to kneel before him and beg. But I do not. For like Phoenix, I am declared already decided. I am no longer to guide the course, merely to be carried, into darkness and beyond with only Achilles' hands at the helm. Ajax does not have Odysseus's equanimity. He glares, his face carved with anger. It has cost him much to be here, to beg for his own demotion. With Achilles not fighting, he is Aristos Achaean. When they are gone, I stand and give my arm to Phoenix. He is tired tonight, I can see, and his steps are slow. By the time I leave him, old bones sighing onto his pallet, and return to our tent, Achilles is already asleep. I am disappointed. I had hoped, perhaps, for conversation, for two bodies in one bed, for reassurance that the Achilles I saw at dinner was not the only one. But I do not rouse him. I slip from the tent and leave him to dream. I crouch in loose sand in the shadow of a small tent. Briseis, I call softly.
There is a silence. Then I hear,
Patroclus. Yes.
She tugs up the side of the tent and pulls me quickly inside. Her face is pinched with fear.
It is too dangerous for you to be here. Agamemnon is in a rage. He will kill you.
Her words are a rushing whisper.
Because Achilles refused the embassy, I whisper back.
She nods, and in a swift motion snuffs out the tent's small lamp.
Agamemnon comes often to look in on me. You are not safe here.
In the darkness, I cannot see the worry on her face, but her voice is filled with it.
You must go.
I will be quick. I have to speak with you. Then we must hide you. He comes without warning. Where?
The tent is small, bare of everything but pallet, pillows and blankets and a few clothes.
The bed.
She piles cushions around me and heaps blankets. She lies down beside me, pulling the cover over us both. I am surrounded by her scent, familiar and warm. I press my mouth to her ear, speaking barely louder than a breath.
Odysseus says that tomorrow the Trojans will break the wall and storm the camp. We must find a place to hide you, among the Myrmidons or in the forest.
I feel her cheek moving against mine as she shakes her head.
I cannot. That is the first place he will look. It will only make more trouble. I will be all right here. But what if they take the camp? I will surrender to Aeneas, Hector's cousin, if I can. He is known to be a pious man, and his father lived as a shepherd for a time near my village. If I cannot, I will find Hector or any of the sons of Priam.
I am shaking my head.
It is too dangerous. You must not expose yourself. I do not think they will hurt me. I am one of them, after all.
I feel suddenly foolish. The Trojans are liberators to her, not invaders.
Of course, I say quickly. You will be free, then. You will want to be with your...
Briseis?
The tent flap is drawn backwards and Agamemnon stands in the doorway.
Yes?
She sits up, careful to keep the blanket over me.
Were you speaking?
Praying, my lord.
Lying down?
Through the thick weave of wool I can see the glow of torchlight. His voice is loud, as if he is standing beside us. I will myself not to move. She will be punished if I am caught here.
It is how my mother taught me, my lord. Is it not right?
You should have been taught better by now. Did not the godling correct you?
No, my lord.
I offered you back to him tonight, but he did not want you.
I can hear the ugly twist in his words.
If he keeps saying no, perhaps I will claim you for myself.
My fists clench, but Briseis only says,
Yes, my lord.
I hear the fall of cloth and the light disappears. I do not move, nor breathe until Briseis returns beneath the covers.
You cannot stay here, I say. It is all right. He only threatens. He likes to see me afraid.
The matter-of-factness in her tone horrifies me. How can I leave her to this, the leering and lonely tent and bracelets thick as manacles? But if I stay, she is in greater danger.
I must go, I say. Wait.
She touches my arm.
The men.
She hesitates.
They are angry with Achilles. They blame him for their losses. Agamemnon sends his people among them to stir up talk. They have almost forgotten about the plague. The longer he does not fight, the more they will hate him.
It is my worst fear. Phoenix's story come to life.
Will he not fight?
Not until Agamemnon apologizes. She bites her lip.
The Trojans, too. There is no one that they fear more or hate more. They will kill him if they can tomorrow, and all who are dear to him. You must be careful.
He will protect me.
I know he will, she says, as long as he lives. But even Achilles may not be able to fight Hector and Sarpedon both.
She hesitates again.
If the camp falls, I will claim you as my husband. It may help some. You must not speak of what you were to him, though. It will be a death sentence.
Her hand has tightened on my arm.
Promise me.
Briseis, I say, if he is dead, I will not be far behind. She presses my hand to her cheek.
Then promise me something else, she says. Promise me that whatever happens, you will not leave Troy without me. I know that you cannot.
She breaks off.
I would rather live as your sister than remain here.
That is nothing that you have to bind me to, I say. I would not leave you, if you wish to come. It grieved me beyond measure to think of the war ending tomorrow and never seeing you again. The smile is thick in her throat.
I am glad.
I do not say that I do not think I will ever leave Troy. I draw her to me, fill my arms with her. She lays her head upon my chest. For a moment, we do not think of Agamemnon and danger and dying Greeks. There is only her small hand on my stomach, and the softness of her cheek as I stroke it. It is strange how well she fits there, how easily I touch my lips to her hair, soft and smelling of lavender. She sighs a little, nestles closer. Almost, I can imagine that this is my life, held in the sweet circle of her arms. I would marry her, and we would have a child. Perhaps if I had never known Achilles.
I should go, I say.
She draws down the blanket, releasing me into the air. She cups my face in her hands.
Be careful tomorrow, she says. Best of men. Best of the Myrmidons.
She places her fingers to my lips, stopping my objection.
It is truth, she says. Let it stand for once.
Then she leads me to the side of her tent, helps me slip beneath the canvas. The last thing I feel is her hand, squeezing mine in farewell. That night, I lie in bed beside Achilles. His face is innocent, sleep smoothed and sweetly boyish. I love to see it. This is his truest self, earnest and guileless, full of mischief but without malice. He is lost in Agamemnon and Odysseus's wily double meanings, their lies and games of power. They have confounded him, tied him to a stake and baited him. I stroke the soft skin of his forehead. I would untie him if I could, if he would let me. Chapter 29. We wake to shouts and thunder, a storm that has burst from the blue of the sky. There is no rain, only the grey air, crackling and dry, and jagged streaks that strike like the clap of giant hands. We hurry to the tent door to look out. Smoke, acrid and dark, is drifting up the beach towards us, carrying the smell of lightning-detonated earth. The attack has begun, and Zeus is keeping his bargain, punctuating the Trojans' advance with celestial encouragement. We feel a pounding, deep in the ground, a charge of chariots, perhaps, led by the huge Sarpedon. Achilles' hand grips mine, his face stilled. This is the first time in 10 years that the Trojans have ever threatened the gate, have ever pushed so far across the plain. If they break through the wall, they will burn the ships, our only way of getting home, the only thing that makes us an army instead of refugees. This is the moment that Achilles and his mother have summoned. The Greeks, routed and desperate without him. The sudden, incontrovertible proof of his worth. But when will it be enough? When will he intervene?
Never, he says when I ask him, never, until Agamemnon begs my forgiveness or Hector himself walks into my camp and threatens what is dear to me. I have sworn I will not.
What if Agamemnon is dead?
Bring me his body, and I will fight.
His face is carved and unmovable, like the statue of a stern god. Do you not fear that the men will hate you?
They should hate Agamemnon. It is his pride that kills them.
And yours. But I know the look on his face, the dark recklessness of his eyes. He will not yield. He does not know how. I have lived 18 years with him, and he has never backed down, never lost. What will happen if he is forced to? I am afraid for him, and for me, and for all of us. We dress and eat, and Achilles speaks bravely of the future. He talks of tomorrow, when perhaps we will swim or scramble up the bare trunks of sticky cypresses, or watch for the hatching of the sea turtle eggs, even now incubating beneath the sun-warmed sand. But my mind keeps slipping from his words, dragged downwards by the seeping grey of the sky, by the sand chilled and pallid as a corpse, and the distant dying shrieks of men whom I know. How many more by day's end? I watch him staring over the ocean. It is unnaturally still, as if Thetis is holding her breath. His eyes are dark and dilated by the dim overcast of the morning. The flame of his hair licks against his forehead.
"Who's that?"
he asks suddenly. Down the beach, a distant figure is being carried on a stretcher to the white tent. Someone important. There is a crowd around him. I seize on the excuse for motion, distraction. I will go see. Outside the remove of our camp, the sounds of battle grow louder. Piercing screams of horses impaled on the stakes of the trench, the desperate shouts of the commanders, the clangor of metal on metal. Podalerius shoulders past me into the white tent. The air is thick with the smell of herbs and blood, fear and sweat. Nestor looms up at me from my right, his hand clamping around my shoulder, chilling through my tunic. He screeches, "We are lost! The wall is breaking!" Behind him, Machaon lies panting on a pallet, his leg a spreading pool of blood from the ragged prick of an arrow. Podalerius is bent over him, already working. Machaon sees me.
"Patroclus," he says, gasping a little.
I go to him. "Will you be all right?"
"Cannot tell yet. I think..."
He breaks off, his eyes squeezed shut.
"Do not talk to him," Podalerius says sharply.
His hands are covered in his brother's blood. Nestor's voice rushes onward, listing woe after woe, the wall splintering and the ships in danger, and so many wounded kings, Diomedes, Agamemnon, Odysseus, strewn about the camp like crumpled tunics. Machaon's eyes open.
"Can you not speak to Achilles?" he says hoarsely. "Please, for all of us."
"Yes, fire must come to our aid, or we are lost."
Nestor's fingers dig into my flesh, and my face is damp with the panicked spray of his lips. My eyes close. I am remembering Phoenix's story, the image of the Caledonians kneeling before Cleopatra, covering her hands and feet with their tears. In my imagination, she does not look at them, only lends them her hands as if perhaps they were cloths to wipe their streaming eyes. She is watching her husband, Meleager, for his answer, the set of his mouth that tells her what she must say. No. I yank myself from the old man's clinging fingers. I am desperate to escape the sour smell of fear that has settled like ash over everything. I turn from Machaon's pain-twisted face and the old man's outstretched hands and flee from the tent. As I step outside, there is a terrible cracking, like a ship's hull tearing apart, like a giant tree smashing to earth. The wall. Screams follow, of triumph and terror. All around me are men carrying fallen comrades, limping on makeshift crutches or crawling through the sand, dragging broken limbs behind them. I know them, their torsos full of scars my ointments have packed and sealed, their flesh that my fingers have cleaned of iron and bronze and blood, their faces that have joked, thanked, grimaced as I worked over them. Now these men are ruined again, pulpy with blood and split bone. Because of him. Because of me. Ahead of me, a young man struggles to stand on an arrow-pierced leg. Eurypylus, Prince of Thessaly. I do not stop to think. I wind my arm under his shoulder and carry him to his tent. He is half delirious with pain, but he knows me.
"Patroclus,"
he manages. I kneel before him, his leg in my hands.
"Eurypylus," I say, "can you speak?"
"Fucking Paris," he says.
"My leg!"
The flesh is swollen and torn. I seize my dagger and begin to work. He grits his teeth.
"I don't know who I hate more, the Trojans or Achilles. Sarpedon tore the wall apart with his bare hands. Ajax held them off as long as he could. They're here now," he says, panting. "In the camp."
My chest clutches in panic at his words, and I fight the urge to bolt. I try to focus on what is before me, easing the arrow point from his leg, binding the wound.
"Hurry,"
he says, the words slurring.
"I have to go back. They'll burn the ships."
"You cannot go out again," I say. "You have lost too much blood."
"No,"
he says, but his head slumps backwards. He is on the edge of unconsciousness. He will live, or not, by the will of the gods. I have done all I can. I take a breath and step outside. Two ships are on fire, the long fingers of their masts lit by Trojan torches. Pressed against the hulls is a crush of men screaming, desperate, leaping to the decks to beat at the flames. The only one I can recognize is Ajax, legs widespread on Agamemnon's prow, a massive shadow outlined against the sky. He ignores the fire, his spear stabbing downwards at the Trojan hands that swarm like feeding fish. As I stand there, frozen and staring, I see a sudden hand reaching above the melee to grip the sharp nose of a ship, and then the arm beneath it, sure and strong and dark, and the head and the wide-shouldered torso breaks to air like dolphin back from the boiling men beneath. And now Hector's whole brown body twists alone before the blankness of sea and sky, hung between air and earth. His face is smoothed, at peace, his eyes lifted, a man in prayer, a man seeking God. He hangs there a moment, the muscles in his arm knotted and flexed, his armor lifting on his shoulders, showing hip bones like the carved cornice of a temple. Then his other hand swings a bright torch towards the ship's wooden deck. It is well thrown, landing amid old rotting ropes and fallen sail. The flames catch immediately, skittering along the rope, then kindling the wood beneath. Hector smiles, and why should he not? He is winning. Ajax screams in frustration, at another ship in flames, at the men that leap in panic from the charring decks, at Hector slithering out of reach, vanishing back into the crowd below. His strength is all that keeps the men from utterly breaking. And then a spear point flashes up from beneath, silver as fish scale in sunlight. It flickers, almost too fast to see, and suddenly Ajax's thigh blooms bright red. I have worked long enough in Machaon's tent to know that it has sliced through muscle. His knees waver a moment, buckling slowly. He falls. Chapter 30. Achilles watched me approach, running so hard my breaths carried the taste of blood onto my tongue. I wept, my chest shaking, my throat rubbed raw. He would be hated now. No one would remember his glory, or his honesty, or his beauty. All his gold would be turned to ashes and ruin. "What has happened?" he asked. His brow was drawn deep in concern. Did he truly not know? "They are dying," I choked out. "All of them. The Trojans are in the camp. They are burning the ships. Ajax is wounded. There is no one left but you to save them." His face had gone cold as I spoke. "If they are dying, it is Agamemnon's fault. I told him what would happen if he took my honor. Last night he offered..." He made a noise in his throat. "He offered nothing. Some tripods, some armor. Nothing to make right his insult, or to admit his wrong. I have saved him time and again, his army, his life." His voice was thick with barely restrained anger. "Odysseus may lick his boots, and Diomedes and all the rest, but I will not." "He is a disgrace," I clutched at him like a child. "I know it, and all the men know it too. You must forget him. It is as you said, he will doom himself, but do not blame them for his fault. Do not let them die because of his madness. They have loved you and honored you." "Honored me? Not one of them stood with me against Agamemnon. Not one of them spoke for me." The bitterness in his tone shocked me. "They stood by and let him insult me as if he were right. I toiled for them for 10 years, and their repayment is to discard me." His eyes had gone dark and distant. "They have made their choice. I shed no tears for them." From down the beach, the crack of a mast falling. The smoke was thicker now, more ships on fire, more men dead. They would be cursing him, damning him to the darkest chains of our underworld. "They were foolish, yes, but they are still our people." "The Myrmidons are our people. The rest can save themselves." He would have walked away, but I held him to me. "You are destroying yourself. You will not be loved for this. You will be hated and cursed. Please, if you..."
Patroclus.
The word was sharp, as he had never spoken it. His eyes bore down on me, his voice like the judge's sentence.
I will not do this. Do not ask again.
I stared at him, straight as a spear stabbing the sky. I could not find the words that would reach him. Perhaps there were none. The grey sand, the grey sky, and my mouth parched and bare. It felt like the end of all things. He would not fight. The men would die, and his honour with it. No mitigation, no mercy. Yet still my mind scrabbled in its corners, desperate, hoping to find the thing that might soften him. I knelt and pressed his hands to my face. My cheeks flowed with tears unending like water over dark rock. For me, then, I said. Save them for me. I know what I am asking of you, but I ask it for me. He looked down at me, and I saw the pull my words had on him, the struggle in his eyes. He swallowed.
Anything else?
He said.
Anything, but not this. I cannot.
I looked at the stone of his beautiful face and despaired. If you love me...
No. His face was stiff with tension. I cannot. If I yield, Agamemnon can dishonor me whenever he wishes. The kings will not respect me, nor the men.
He was breathless, as though he had run far.
Do you think I wish them all to die? But I cannot, I cannot. I will not let him take this from me.
Then do something else. Send the Myrmidons at least. Send me in your place. Put me in your armor, and I will lead the Myrmidons. They will think it is you. The words shocked us both. They seemed to come through me, not from me, as though spoken straight from a god's mouth, yet I seized on them as a drowning man. Do you see? You will not have to break your oath, yet the Greeks will be saved. He stared at me. But you cannot fight, he said. I will not have to. They are so frightened of you. If I show myself, they will run.
No, he said. It is too dangerous.
Please. I gripped him. It isn't. I will be all right. I won't go near them. Automedon will be with me, and the rest of the Myrmidons. If you cannot fight, you cannot, but save them this way. Let me do this. You said you would grant me anything else.
But I did not let him answer.
Think. Agamemnon will know you defy him still, but the men will love you. There is no fame greater than this. You will prove to them all that your phantom is more powerful than Agamemnon's whole army. He was listening. It will be your mighty name that saves them, not your spear arm. They will laugh at Agamemnon's weakness then. Do you see? I watched his eyes, saw the reluctance giving way inch by inch. He was imagining it. The Trojans fleeing from his armor, outflanking Agamemnon. The men falling at his feet in gratitude. He held up his hand.
Swear to me, he said. Swear to me that if you go, you will not fight them. You will stay with Automedon in the chariot and let the Myrmidons go in front of you.
Yes, I pressed my hand to his. Of course, I am not mad. To frighten them, that is all. I was drenched and giddy. I had found a way through the endless corridors of his pride and fury. I would save the men. I would save him from himself. You will let me? He hesitated another moment, his green eyes searching mine. Then, slowly, he nodded. Achilles knelt, buckling me in, his fingers so swift that I could not follow them, only feel the quick, pulling cinches of tightening belts. Bit by bit, he assembled me, the bronze breastplate and greaves, tight against my skin, the leather underskirt. As he worked, he instructed me in a voice that was low and quick and constant. I must not fight. I must not leave Automedon, nor the other Myrmidons. I was to stay in the chariot and flee at the first sign of danger. I could chase the Trojans back to Troy, but not try to fight them there. And most of all, I must stay away from the walls of the city and the archers that perched there, ready to pick off Greeks who came too close.
It will not be like before, he said.
when I am there. I know. I shifted my shoulders. The armor was stiff and heavy and unyielding. I feel like Daphne, I told him, barked up in her new laurel skin. He did not laugh, only handed me two spears, points polished and gleaming. I took them, the blood beginning to rush in my ears. He was speaking again, more advice, but I did not hear it. I was listening to the drumbeat of my own impatient heart. Hurry, I remember saying. Last, the helmet to cover my dark hair. He turned a polished bronze mirror towards me. I stared at myself in armor I knew as well as my own hands. The crest on the helmet, the silvered sword hanging from the waist, the baldric of hammered gold. All of it unmistakable and instantly recognizable. Only my eyes felt like my own, larger and darker than his. He kissed me, catching me up in a soft, opened warmth that breathed sweetness into my throat. Then he took my hand and we went outside to the Myrmidons. They were lined up, armored and suddenly fearsome, their layers of metal flashing like the bright wings of cicadas. Achilles led me to the chariot already yoked to its three-horse team. Don't leave the chariot. Don't throw your spears. And I understood that he was afraid that I would give myself away if I actually fought. I will be all right, I told him, and turned my back to fit myself into the chariot, to settle my spears and set my feet. Behind me, he spoke a moment to the Myrmidons, waving a hand over his shoulder at the smoking decks of ships, the black ash that swarmed upwards to the sky, and the roiling mass of bodies that tussled at their hulls. Bring him back to me, he told them. They nodded and clattered their spears on their shields in approval. Automedon stepped in front of me, taking the reins. We all knew why the chariot was necessary. If I ran down the beach, my steps would never be mistaken for his. The horses snorted and blew, feeling their charioteer behind them. The wheels gave a little lurch and I staggered, my spears rattling. Balance them, he told me. It will be easier. Everyone waited as I awkwardly transferred one spear to my left hand, swiping my helmet askew as I did so. I reached up to fix it. I will be fine, I told him. Myself. Are you ready? Automedon asked. I took a last look at Achilles, standing by the side of the chariot, almost forlorn. I reached for his hand, and he gripped it. Be careful, he said. I will. There was more to say, but for once we did not say it. There would be other times for speaking, tonight and tomorrow, and all the days after that. He let go of my hand. I turned back to Automedon. I'm ready, I told him. The chariot began to roll, Automedon guiding it towards the packed sand nearer the surf. I felt, when we reached it, the wheels catching, the car smoothing out. We turned towards the ships, picking up speed. I felt the wind snatch at my crest, and I knew that the horsehair was streaming behind me. I lifted my spears. Automedon crouched down low so that I would be seen first. Sand flew from our churning wheels and the Myrmidons clattered behind us. My breaths had begun to come in gasps and I gripped the spear shafts till my fingers hurt. We flew past the empty tents of Idomeneus and Diomedes around the beach's curve, and finally the first clumps of men. Their faces blurred by, but I heard their shouts of recognition and sudden joy. Achilles! It is Achilles! I felt a fierce and flooding relief. It is working. Now, 200 paces away, rushing towards me were the ships and the armies, heads turning at the noise of our wheels and the Myrmidon feet beating in unison against the sand. I took a breath and squared my shoulders inside the grip of his armor. And then, head tilted back, spear raised, feet braced against the sides of the chariot, praying that we would not hit a bump that would throw me, I screamed, a wild, frenzied sound that shook my whole body. 1,000 faces, Trojan and Greek, turned to me in frozen shock and joy. With a crash, we were among them. I screamed again, his name boiling up out of my throat, and heard an answering cry from the embattled Greeks, an animal howl of hope. The Trojans began to break apart before me, scrambling backwards with gratifying terror. I bared my teeth in triumph, blood flooding my veins, the fierceness of my pleasure as I saw them run. But the Trojans were brave men, and not all of them ran. My hand lifted, hefting my spear in threat. Perhaps it was the armor molding me, perhaps it was the years of watching him, but the position my shoulder found was not the old wobbling awkwardness. It was higher, stronger, a perfect balance. And then, before I could think about what I did, I threw a long, straight spiral into the breast of a Trojan. The torch that he had been waving at Idomeneus's ship slipped and guttered in the sand as his body pitched backwards. If he bled, if his skull split to show his brain, I did not see it. Dead, I thought. Automedon's mouth was moving, his eyes wide. Achilles does not want you to fight, I guessed he was saying, but already my other spear hefted itself into my hand. I can do this. The horses veered again, and men scattered from our path. That feeling again of pure balance, of the world poised and waiting. My eye caught on a Trojan, and I threw, feeling the swipe of wood against my thumb. He fell, pierced through the thigh in a blow I knew had shattered bone. Two. All around me men screamed Achilles' name. I gripped Automedon's shoulder. Another spear! He hesitated a moment, then pulled on the reins, slowing so I could lean over the side of the rattling chariot to claim one stuck in a body. The shaft seemed to leap into my hand. My eyes were already searching for the next face. The Greeks began to rally, Menelaus killing a man beside me, one of Nestor's sons banging his spear against my chariot as if for luck before he threw at a Trojan prince's head. Desperately, the Trojans scrambled for their chariots in full retreat. Hector ran among them, crying out for order. He gained his chariot, began to lead the men to the gate, and then over the narrow causeway that bridged the trench, and onto the plain beyond. "Go, follow them!" Automedon's face was full of reluctance, but he obeyed, turning the horses in pursuit. I grabbed more spears from bodies, half-dragging a few corpses behind me before I could jerk the points free and chase the Trojan chariots now choking the door. I saw their drivers looking back fearfully, frantically, at Achilles reborn phoenix-like from his sulking rage. Not all the horses were as nimble as Hector's, and many panicked chariots skidded off the causeway to founder in the trench, leaving their drivers to flee on foot. We followed, Achilles' godlike horses racing with their legs outflung into the palm of the air. I might have stopped then, with the Trojans scattering back to their city, but there was a line of rallied Greeks behind me screaming my name, his name. I did not stop. I pointed, and Automedon swept the horses out in an arc, lashing them onward. We passed the fleeing Trojans and curved around to meet them as they ran. My spears aimed and aimed again, splitting open bellies and throats, lungs and hearts. I am relentless, unerring, skirting buckles and bronze to tear flesh that spills red like the jagged puncture of a wineskin. From my days in the white tent, I know every frailty they have. It is so easy. From the roiling melee bursts a chariot. The driver is huge, his long hair flying behind as he lashes his horses to foam and froth. His dark eyes are fixed on me, his mouth twisted in rage. His armor fits him like the skin fits the seal. It is Sarpedon. His arm lifts to aim his spear at my heart. Automedon screams something, yanks at the reins. There is a breath of wind over my shoulder. The spear's sharp point buries itself in the ground behind me. Sarpedon shouts, curse or challenge I do not know. I heft my spear as if in a dream. This is the man who has killed so many Greeks. It was his hands that tore open the gate. No! Automedon catches at my arm. With his other hand he lashes the horses and we tear up the field. Sarpedon turns his chariot, angling it away, and for a moment I think he has given up. Then he angles in again and lifts his spear. The world explodes. The chariot bucks into the air, and the horses scream.